Excuse me. I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Kelly. I'd like to welcome everyone on today's IRTP Part D working group call on Monday, the 20th of May. On today's call, we have James Bladel, Christine Lorrain, Barbara Knight, Michael O'Connor, Jill Titzer, Bartlett Morgan, Simonetta Battaglia, Holly Raich, Bob Mountain, Alan Greenberg. We have noted apologies from Avery Doria, Michele Nalon, Rob Golding, Volker Gaimann, Graham Bunton, Oliver Hope, and Paul Diaz. From staff today, we have Lars Hoffmann and myself, Gisela Gruber. I hope I haven't left anyone off the roll call. If I could also please remind you all to state your names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Gisela, and welcome everyone to the IRTP PDP working group call for May 20th. Just a couple of quick announcements here. I note that today we have a number of apologies, and my understanding is that it is a holiday, banking holiday, somewhere in the world. Is it maybe a European thing? Also, my wife. I'm sorry?
Canada, if nowhere else.
Canada as well? Okay. My wife pointed out to me, which I was completely oblivious to, is that next Monday is a holiday in the U.S., so all of our USians will probably see a rash of apologies. I'm willing to go forward. I don't know about, I can't speak for the co-chair or any other members here, but if there's sufficient participation from folks outside the U.S., I'm willing to go forward. Oh, and U.K. as well. Thank you, Gisela. I guess we'll tentatively schedule for next week and see how we do as far as if we can achieve a quorum, and if, you know, by Friday it looks like we're just not going to get critical mass, then we can cancel the call. We'll see. We'll play it by ear, I guess, for the rest of the week and see how we go. One other announcement. Prior to the call, there was a note posted to the list by Michele Nalon of Black Knight. I spoke with him this morning, just due to his commitments elsewhere in ICANN and, of course, his day job. He's going to drop into more of an inactive role, or a passive role, I think is what we call it, where someone participates in the working group, but really is monitoring the list and just participating in document editing, but doesn't attend the weekly call. We will certainly miss his charm, wit, and insights on a weekly basis, but hopefully we haven't lost him entirely as far as the working group list. Anybody who knows Michele knows that, you know, the guy just doesn't sleep as far as everything he has on his plate. If we can help lessen his load there, I think that's a good thing. With that said, let's jump into item number one. Does anyone have any updates to their statement of interest? Okay, seeing none, can we then move on and ask if anyone has any comments or suggested edits for our draft agenda that was circulated on the mailing list earlier and appears in the right-hand column of the Adobe chat room? Okay, seeing none there, we'll consider that adopted, and we'll go forward. We are continuing with our review of community feedback. It looks like we do have a solid response and discussions going up to, looks like, page five. I think we can get through this not only today, but in the next few minutes here, optimistically. Then we can move on to some of the other data and documents that have been circulating on the mailing list. We don't want those to get too far down the road to where we forget why we asked for that data. I think, you know, if it doesn't look like we're going to pull out of these comment review, then maybe we put that on pause. I'm just proposing here that we would maybe put that on pause and then go back and circle back to this once we've reviewed those documents. For right now, I think we can continue with Lars. It looks like we left off with comment number seven. Is that correct? We're now on charter question D. Mike?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Okay, great. So charter question D asks, should certain requirements best practices be put in place for registrars to post information on dispute resolution options and what's available to registrants? And number seven, coming from the BC, in the interest of consumer protection, the BC recommends establishing requirements for registrars to publish information pertaining to transfer dispute resolution options available to registrants. I would note here that the charter question seems to position an either-or question of requirements or best practices, so I guess an and. But the BC is focusing on this being a mandatory requirement. So we can take a cue on that question or that response if anyone has any thoughts on that. Quiet group this morning. Mikey.
Thanks, James. It's Mikey. I guess I just wanted to chime in and say that I think this is sort of along the lines of some of the other recommendations we've made in the intervening time in other working groups like PEDNR and so on, where we're sort of steadily expanding the list of things that registrars publish to help consumers of their services sort of navigate the tricky bits. And so I'd support this. I don't think it's terribly onerous. I think it sort of goes into that same pile of stuff that make it easier for people to know what to do in the right place. And I think the other thing is that, as with many of the other things, we are hoping that by publishing this information, we'll also reduce the errors that are happening and so on and so forth. So I'm okay with require on this one.
Okay, thank you, Mikey. I put myself in the queue, but we'll defer to Bob. Unless you'd rather have the last word, Bob.
No, James,
I'm happy to go.
James, if you like, I'm happy to defer to you if you'd like to continue and go first.
Oh, well, I was just going to weigh in as a registrar. I imagine you might do the same thing. Go ahead, Bob. I'll put myself at the end of the queue here. It's just more of a placeholder. Go for it.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, James. I guess this is Bob Mountain. Not really, since our registrar operations aren't as sort of customer facing as probably other people on the call. I'm somewhat surprised that the transfer dispute options are not available to a registrant. Is that the case that they're not at all available? In terms of having some kind of published information to a registrant, I guess it's sort of an open question, and that would affect how I feel about the particular charter question. That's all.
So this is James, and this is speaking in a registrar capacity. I think that we're kind of going back to charter question C a little bit here, where we have TDRP and it is accessible and available for registrars, presumably to invoke that process on behalf of their registrar customers. But whenever we make something available to registrars, then we're assuming that they're offering it down the line. And I guess the question on the table here with charter question D is, if they're not offering it, then what would they publish? So I think that this charter question D does tie to charter question C in some respects. However we land on that will determine how we respond on this one. I do want to point out that I am in favor of full disclosure. I think I do kind of come down on Mikey's side of the equation here. Where that disclosure goes, however, is still, I think, a fair question. From a registrar perspective, we certainly don't want to have ICANN consensus policy driving notices and asterisks and fine print all over our web pages so they start to look like, when you see a prescription medication advertised on TV in the U.S., it's 10 seconds of ads for the prescription and then 50 seconds worth of disclaimers about the you know, the side effects or something like that. I think, you know, I certainly hope that we would show enough restraint that we wouldn't go down that road, and we would put this, maybe this basis is more appropriate in the registration agreement that we're already required to enter into with registrant customers, or maybe it belongs in the rights and responsibility document that's already out there. You know, I don't know. I do think that when we, I agree with Mikey, it does not seem very onerous to disclose what it is that we're offering and allow registrants to make an informed choice, but also, you know, want to be consistent across all of these working groups that we're putting all this important information in an accessible and easy to reach and easy to find location. So that's just my two cents there, and I can see that the queue is now proliferating, so I'll drop out here and go to Alan.
Thank you. First, I want to point out that there's some curious wording in answer number 7 that the BC is saying that registrars should publish options available to registrants. Now, right now, the transfer option is not available. The dispute option is not available to them. So, I don't know if they're saying that deliberately or not. Mikey said something wider, I think, that is the registrant should be aware of, you know, of the options, even if it's not their call. I think that's what Mikey said, which I tend to agree. In other words, obviously, if we make a recommendation that registrants should be able to initiate a dispute, they have to be told about it. I think that's perhaps intuitive. But I would suggest that even if they can't be the initiator, they should be told that's one of the processes that might go forward, and at least they can lobby with their registrar to do that, should there be some merit in it.
So, Alan, just to clarify,
I would go a little bit farther than the exact wording of the BC answer, and I think that's what Mikey implied too, but I'll defer to Mikey to say that.
Alan, if I can, we'll ask Mikey to clarify, but if you could clarify as well, but even sure. If the registrar does not offer and is not required to offer a particular dispute mechanism to its customers, it should still publish what exactly?
That this is a mechanism the registrar might exercise. The very fact that we're considering whether it should be extended to registrants or not implies registrants have an interest in it happening, or might have an interest in it happening. And therefore, it's hidden from them, even if we end up saying they don't have the right to initiate it.
So I'm just trying to play this out in my mind now, and I'm not trying to be a devil's advocate or anything, but if there is a dispute mechanism like TDRP, and it is optional, it is at the registrar's discretion whether or not they want to initiate that they should publish to the registrant that this mechanism exists for this particular purpose, but it is at the registrar's discretion whether or not they will initiate it with the registry. In that scenario, is that how you see this being?
That's right. And this is something I think is fine buried in the registration agreement. It's not something that you want to have flashing red signs on, you know, at every registration. Remember, we're looking at a dispute mechanism which is rarely used. And we're looking at tail end effects.
Okay. You referenced some of Mikey's comments, so I might put the cue on hold and give deference to the co-chair. Mikey, would you want to respond?
That's why I stuck my hand up. This is Mikey.
And there's also an answer by Chris in the chat we may want to look at. Thank you.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Chris says, I think the BC statement was general and not specifically limited in scope. And what I was going to do is point us back to the charter question where it says, registrars to make information on transfer dispute resolution options available to registrants. So I was indeed thinking of a more general thing, irrespective of the outcome on C, that says, you know, you've got other choices too. You could sue people, you can send a request to ICANN, but I think that, you know, it's in the make this already established information more readily available to registrants. That's the goal here. And I think we're sort of agreeing on that. I don't know if in the registration agreement's the best. I kind of like James's idea of rights and responsibilities better, but, you know,
yeah.
I don't want to get bogged down in all that.
Okay, thanks, Mikey. We'll go next to Holly.
Yeah, I was just going to pick up the rights and responsibilities and ask, well, we've got a document that is without comment on what is in the sort of registrant's rights and responsibilities document that's part of the you know, RIA documentation. What about in there you have the general requirement that's in D, which is you make information available on transfer dispute resolution, and then, picking up Alan's point, it's whether the information is it available or not, or is there just some statement in the particular registrar's document on at least on the transfer dispute resolution option that's available, and that just be put into the registrant's rights and responsibilities statement that's out there. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Holly. Bob, you're up next.
Yeah, thanks, James. This is Bob Mountain. Yeah, I guess is there a concern that by exposing registrant options further, that we're creating a significant increase in workload that is currently being handled well a different way? And because otherwise, I can't think of any other reason why we wouldn't want to expose registrant options other than if we're going to be, adding significantly to the registrar workload in a way that's unnecessary. But otherwise, I would say it just seems, to position it to a registrant, here are your options, just seems to be, reasonable. So.
Thanks, Bob. And just to reflect, I think, where the conversation's going, I think that's correct. I don't know that anyone knows what it would do to overall workload, but I think so long as we're not giving the registrant the wrong impression of options that are available versus rights that they have, I think, everyone's agreeing. It's just more of a question of where does it go. And I think to Alan's point in the chat and to Holly's point, it seems like if we come down on charter question C, that it's a right that they have, then maybe it goes in the rights and responsibilities, but if it's just an option, then maybe it goes in the registration agreement. I don't know that we've settled on that, but I think that it sounds like more information and disclosure is always good. Sunetta?
Mm. Yes.
Sunetta, you may be on mute.
So, sorry. I just got an email this week from one of our customers who happens to be in China, whose name's got backed, and he wanted to dispute the whole thing, and the names are now at GoDaddy, and this person was absolutely clueless as to how to go about the whole process. So I think having some information available at a registrar, how you do this, like who you contact, people don't even know who to get in touch with. They're trying to contact their registrar. They don't know, is that the right person to talk to, because they realize, well, my name isn't even at my registrar anymore. They don't know who within a registrar to contact. They get tossed around. So some information for registrants as to what to do when you think that your names have transferred and this is not what you wanted to have happen would be very helpful for the user, because right now it's not easy to find this information and people are struggling with this. So having something written up that says, here are those five steps that you should explain to your user, and you can do this either in an FAQ or you can put like a little link somewhere on your website, just as you're required to have a whois lookup as a registrar, isn't too burdensome for people to do. So at least when something happens, you know what the process is as a user, and you don't have to deal with a customer care agent at your registrar who might not even know what to do in that case.
Okay, thank you, Simonetta. And if you're still having issues with that particular name, let me know offline. We'll see if we can get you talking to the right folks. Alan?
Thank you. I completely agree with what Simonetta just said on, a how-to if you're in that kind of situation. That's the kind of thing I strongly support. I just want to comment on why I said the registration agreement may be the right place for it. And those who know me will find that very uncharacteristic, because I'm normally pushing for everything to be clearly and blatantly available. In this case, I don't think I would want to see a right saying you have the right to pressure your registrar to try to convince the registrar to initiate a dispute. And that's what it really comes down to. So awareness that it exists should be there somewhere. I'm not sure I would list that as a right. Unless, of course, we actually make it a registrant, right, in which case it definitely goes there. This is one of those gray areas where I think it should be, I don't think the registrar should be completely silent on the existence of that path, but I would be careful about listing it as a right. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Mikey, you want the last word, or you can go ahead now?
I'm sorry, this is Mikey. I was just going to respond to Alan's point. I think he's right. I'm racking my brain. We recommended in IRTP something or other. An ICANN-maintained neutral page filled with good information about something. How about that for narrowing it down? And
I think it was Pedner.
Maybe it was Pedner. Anyway, I think that model might be a better one, rather than putting it directly into rights and responsibilities, because I agree with Alan, if it's not a right, we shouldn't put it in there. Again, the actual destination, I don't care. I'm a little edgy about putting it in the registration agreement just because when you're in the heat of distress, that's probably not going to show up very well in a search. So, it's like what would be lovely is if you could type into search, my domain's been transferred, what can I do? And have it actually respond with, a page that was credible and had correct information. So I'm quibbling about where, but I think we're tending to all agree that we want to get this out in a good place, and I also agree with Alan that it only works if it's a right. And the other options, lawsuits, et cetera, don't really fall into rights and responsibilities either. I don't know. Anyway, that's a ramble.
Thanks, Mikey. I'd like to weigh in, if I can, not only as a registrar, but also as a participant in the RAA negotiation team that drafted the 2013 RAA, and in particular as the individual who did the bulk of the drafting for the rights and responsibilities document that's contained in that RAA, which, first off, I wanted just to say for the record that I think it's not really a great, I think it's a confusing name for that document. I think I wanted to call it the registrant benefits in the RAA statement or something along those lines, because I think it was confusing with the other rights and responsibilities document that was drafted by the community. But anyway, it does state in here that you registrants, are entitled to accurate and accessible information about, and then there are several bullet points, one of which being the customer support services offered by your registrar and proxy services provider and how to access them. And then another one is how to raise concerns and resolve disputes with your registrar and any privacy service offered by them. So it sounds like we're already saying that, that some form of, even if it's not in the registration agreement or in the rights and responsibilities agreement, I think where Mikey was going is that it should be part of that general support resources that are made available to registrants in the care and feeding of their domain name registration and how to contact support resources and how to engage them. I don't know that, and I think, Mikey, you were kind of hinting at this as well. I don't know that we want to, or that I would be in favor of saying anything about you have the right to sue us or other registrars or ICANN or whatever. I think, you know, that's always implied in any commercial agreement, right, if you're not happy with the outcome. And certainly I don't think it needs to be explicitly stated. But overall, I think we're all kind of coming down in the same place. It's just a matter of what are we going to say and where are we going to say it. But I think everybody agrees that something needs to be said. So I'll drop there and go to Simonetta.
Well, I have a question, really. I'm wondering if there's people on the group, especially registrars, who feel that it shouldn't be the responsibility of a registrar to follow up with a concern like this from their customer, who should be that entity? And if now a registrant can really only go to a registrar, and that registrant, for example, this Chinese customer, would have not much luck going to GoDaddy directly because they don't speak the language of the registrar where this domain is now at, and I'm not so sure how well-versed the GoDaddy legal team is in speaking Chinese. So really, your only chance as that registrant is to go to the entity that you have a business relationship with, which is your registrar. Now, if that entity is not required to do anything for you, not even making information accessible on what you can do through them, and or if they are not willing to help you, who you can go to ask for help, then you're really leaving that registrant in a very unfortunate spot, and that I don't think is the intent here. I mean, that person should get some help, and really the only reasonable entity that could help them is their registrar, as far as I can tell, and maybe then have some information available if that registrar does not respond, does not help you, or whatever you feel like you want to appeal to something, then I don't know if that should go to ICANN or if it should go to the registry, but right now this person is not able to really find out what to do, and that is not a very good situation.
Thank you, Simonetta, and I agree. It seems like we're kind of trying to find that line between helping and supporting and providing information without crossing the line and offering any guarantees of outcome. And I think we found ourselves in that position before. Barbara?
Thank you, James. This is Barbara. So just kind of moving down to 8, which is the registry stakeholder group comments on this particular item. And, you know, a suggestion, I think that it is helpful for registrants to have some guidance as to where to go in the event that, you know, they feel that there, you know, is a dispute to, you know, domain name that they have claim to. And I think that we were looking for, you know, to the extent that there are best practices, we also felt it was a good idea. And we thought that perhaps, you know, the implementation of the best practices could be, you know, really as simple as putting a link on the registrar's website that kind of goes back to, you know, a common place where, you know, they could all be listed at the ICANN site and maintained there. I don't know if that makes it a little easier. I know ICANN has done quite a bit of work, you know, of late to provide more information on transfers and, you know, the process and all of that. And I'm wondering if it makes sense to just, you know, kind of couple it in that section and put it and put it there so that it makes it a little bit easier to maintain.
Thanks, Barbara. And just for clarification, because I missed, where specifically would it go? On an ICANN site?
Yeah, I'm thinking that, you know, ICANN has already done quite a lot to provide information out there on their site relative to, you know, frequently asked questions, as well as a link to the transfer dispute resolution policy. So it seems like, you know, perhaps in that area, they could put, you know, the additional best practices, you know, if we can all agree upon what best practices should be put there. And that way it kind of takes a little bit of the burden off of each of the individual registrars. And, you know, they would still have an obligation to put, and this is just what we were thinking, to try to easily pull something like this out and have it be consistent, to just put a link which would go back to that area, wherever it is on the ICANN website, to those best practices relative to, you know, disputes and handling, I guess, any inquiries relating to transfers that may come up by a registrar, or excuse me, registrant, pardon me.
Okay, thank you. I think that's, yeah, I mean, that's one option, and it's starting to look like a pretty good one because it's a centralized location that can be modified, and registrars are already required to link to it. I wonder if we could get any stats from ICANN, if they would even be willing to share how frequently, how many unique visitors that document receives on a monthly or yearly basis. I mean, that's maybe more of a side thought for myself, but okay, so there's been a couple of points back and forth here in the chat. I do see that the queue is clear, so I would like to just kind of bring this one in for a landing before we move on to number 8, which is a very dense comment. And then I would propose that before we move on to number 9, that we pause the community review to take a look at some of the TDRP statistics that have been circulating on the list, and I haven't seen too many comments on them recently, but I don't want to go too much further down the road before that data starts to get stale and we wonder why we asked for it in the first place. So let's take a look real quickly here. Barbara kind of teed us up here for response number 8, which is from the registry stakeholder group, and again pointing out that this was submitted in response to the preliminary issues report, not to the comment period. So the registry stakeholder group commends ICANN on the steps taken to provide information to registrants on the transfer process in the form of information on their website, including frequently asked questions, and one of which includes a link to TDRP. The registry support best practices and perhaps requirements for making information on how to initiate a transfer as well as transfer dispute options. Most registrants should know who their registrar is, so registrar websites would be a logical place for registrants to would go for answers to questions relating to transferring the domain name. It is the registry stakeholder group's opinion that information for registrants on how to file a dispute, should they feel that their domain name was transferred without their authorization, or if the registrar of record is prohibiting the transfer of the domain name for reasons direct conflict with IRTP, will also be included. Implementation of agreed upon best practices could be as simple as requiring all registrars to provide a link on their website. The best practices could be hosted and maintained by ICANN. Mm. So this is, I think, what Barbara was referencing. This is kind of where our discussions were leading as well. I think that a couple of things, if I can unpack this, and I'm looking for Barbara, of course, to smack me if I go off course here a little bit, but or kick me under the virtual table. But it looks like the differences here is that the registry stakeholder group are leaning towards best practices, but they're not opposed to requirements. Most registrants should know who their registrar is, and that is actually part of the RAA, Registrants' Rights and Responsibility. I have, surprisingly, there's quite a number of cases where registrants do not know who their sponsoring registrar is. That would be a logical first step to go to. I think, as we mentioned, registrars are required to link to the ICANN Rights and Responsibilities document. So having some mention in that document would fit with what the registry, what I believe the registry position to be. So any other thoughts on this? It's a pretty lengthy and there's a lot of information contained in this comment, but I do believe that it is a it jives with a lot of what we're saying in our discussion of comment number 7. Unless someone sees anything particularly novel or unusual on this one, I think we can say it's a reemphasis of what we've already discussed. Bob?
I'd say, on balance, I'm in agreement with everything that Barbara has written, or the registry stakeholder group has said here. The one question I had is, it references best practices, but authoring and getting consensus on those best practices, is that deferred to the implementation team, or how is that document actually built and finalized and agreed upon?
And that's an excellent question, Bob, and I think that one of the reasons why, and if I can editorialize here in my response, I think one of the reasons why best practices are frequently held up as an alternative but rarely adopted or embraced in a serious way is because we don't really have that second step mechanism where a group of registrars is going off and drafting a document that is not part of consensus policy but is a best practice. I think that I know that in the industry, particularly with regard to transfers, that a lot of the larger registrars and a lot of the active aftermarket registrars have worked together to come up with different, procedures, but at least some shared and common protocols that they would use at least to get the conversation started about how to address or resolve inadvertent or fraudulent transfers. But I think that the other side of that coin is that there's always going to be those registrars who don't participate in ICANN, don't participate in the registrar stakeholder group, and therefore aren't aware or just flat out disregard whatever best practices are developed there. So I guess it's I don't know if that answers your question. I think that one of the things that maybe registrars could do going forward is to build up some confidence in the idea of best practices. I think there's merit there. I just don't know that the follow-up legwork has ever been achieved successfully. Mikey?
This is Mikey. I wanted to jump right on that same train, James, and refer us back now to the registration abuse policies working group, where one of the recommendations that I don't think can't remember the status of this in the GNSO. There was a recommendation to do best practice development with an eye to developing a process by which best practices could be developed in other fields or other topics in the future. That was a recommendation that came out of RAP that I don't believe got out of the starting blocks in the GNSO, and I have to go back and look. But the reason behind that recommendation is the same as the thing you just said, James, which is that there isn't really a mechanism to do this, and that, you know, I would be quite delighted if we picked this as one to do as a pilot and maybe do it in implementation review team context rather than full-blown. I think one of the reasons the council did not want to pursue doing best practices is because it fell outside of the PDP and it got very complicated in terms of chartering it. And so maybe with the simple stroke of moving this into the implementation review cycle or the implementation review team cycle or something like that, we could figure out another avenue to get this done. But I think it would be very helpful if we could.
Hey, thanks, Mikey. And I don't disagree. I would point out, though, and I think maybe I was being unfair to my colleagues a little bit. If there's one area that has seen, I'm going to speak out as a registrar here for just a moment. If there's one area that has seen, I think, some solid and tangible progress in the area of developing and enforcing best practices as an industry, I think it has been around the idea of domain name hijacking and transfer abuse. I think most of the registrars here would agree that, we now have the necessary industry contacts so that the large registrars and the very active registrars, both in ICANN and, in the primary and secondary markets, know who to contact in the event of a dispute, and know what information they're going to be asked to provide. So, you know, I think Mikey, you're right, is that there's not this kind of overarching mechanism to do best practices, but I think that, you know, here is one area where we have had some success, just as a registrar stakeholder group. But you're correct. I mean, it's as you're noting in the chat that, you know, this is still very uneven, and when you get outside the larger providers or the more recognizable providers, then it becomes a little more challenging, and the bad guys who steal domain names know exactly which registrars do not adhere to those best practices. So anyway, the queue now is clear. Does anyone else have any final thoughts on, let's call it, charter question D, 7, and 8? We've got about 15 minutes left in our call for today. I wanted to see if we could ask Lars to queue up I think we have a few emails, and actually, was there a spreadsheet that was sent, Lars, or a Word document that was you were kind of consolidating, or maybe I'm misremembering.
Yes, this is Lars. Sorry, I was on mute. I couldn't find the button. yes, there is a mind map that I'm still trying to work on with Microsoft to make it interactive for everybody. So it's only static.
Is that fully baked yet? Is that something we can share, or does that need some more time?
Yeah, I'll pull it up. You can have a look. I'll pull it up. And then there is also this, which is coming up right now. This is the data. Sorry, I'm unthinking. This is the data that I collected from the different dispute providers, ICANN Compliance, VeriSign, et al. And then, so there's either this, or then, I don't think I can share two at the same time. This is the mind map, which is basically the document from before, only in maybe easier to see in as a single overview,
yeah,
with different colors, red being compliance, blue being VeriSign, and then the purple at the bottom are the TDRP providers, and the yellow boxes are the relevant regulations that the TDRP prescribes in those circumstances, or that are applicable in those circumstances. So do you want me to leave this one up, or you would like me to put up the Word document again?
Well, it's a good question. I think we could probably, this one looks, the mind map looks like it's got a lot in it. Maybe we could just run through the other document fairly quickly and then dive into this one, which I think would substantiate the other one, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Or is it the other way around? Okay. Yeah, I think this one's good. I like where this is, which is going. I always like colors. Anything we can do to untangle some of the very dense topics that we dive into. So for those of you who were in Beijing or participated remotely, we were treated to a very in-depth report from ICANN Compliance regarding their statistics on transfer disputes. So we can pull up this document here, and we can take a quick look as we run through here. That, as we've discussed many times, that the IRTP, the transfer function, is the single largest driver of complaints to ICANN. And I think we've got some stats here that demonstrate that about, a little more than 40% of those were considered to be invalid, and about 58%, less than 60%, were considered to be valid, and a small fraction of the valid complaints were, am I reading that correctly? A small fraction of the valid complaints were related to unauthorized transfers of domain names or something, what we would, I guess, traditionally call hijacks?
This is Lars. Yes, that is correct. So if you, I put up this small diagram at the bottom, right? It's of the green stuff is only the very small black line that is related to the two charter questions. I mean, the others are ITRP related, but not related to hijacks.
Yeah, so we're definitely in long tail territory here, right? Just by looking at that pie chart. Okay, and then of those, it looks like maybe you can help me understand the distinction between email or other hijacking versus unauthorized transfers. The difference between the red and the orange.
Yeah, this is Lars. I believe, if I recall it correctly from the report, is that hijacking is where somebody stole the email address and pretended to be a certain person by using that email address. Whereas unauthorized means that somebody with a completely different, unrelated email address just tried it out and was successful.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Thank you. Yes, it does. And, okay.
James, this is Mikey. Let me
Mikey, I was going to turn over to you. Go ahead, Mike.
Actually, the unauthorized transfer is the one that we ran into where we have contention between the registrant and the admin contact going on. So I think the orangey one is the hijacking, the classic hijacking, whereas the red one is where it's an it's a person known as part of the contact records of the domain that is overreaching and using their authority inappropriately. It's not, I just wanted to correct the impression that Lars gave that somebody's sort of trying a random email address. I don't think that's the case. I think it's somebody who is, in fact, listed as a contact for the domain that's inappropriately transferring.
Okay, so we're saying that orange is essentially a legitimate, for lack of a better word, theft of a domain name registration by impersonation or deception, whereas red is just a more sincere dispute between two parties who are known, who both believe that they should have access or should control that registration.
Right.
Does that make sense, Lars? Does that jive with what you...
Yeah, I think that makes sense, absolutely.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Any other comments on the two pie charts before we move? Yeah, Mikey, go ahead.
This is Mikey. I think that I would be cautious about the long tail depiction of this. I think what this shows is that there are lots of things that go wrong, and that very few of them actually get to this process. And we've discussed this to death, so I won't beat it again. I'd be cautious about saying this is long tail, but rather say that the processes we've got don't necessarily line up with the situation we're trying to address very well.
Yeah, thanks, Mikey, and that actually segues nicely into the next section where we talk about the various anecdotal evidence from registrars. And, Lars, I think I remember sending something to the list, something that we were calling informal or ad hoc resolution of transfer disputes between registrars, or something really clumsy and cumbersome, but we were talking about something else, which I think leads to Mikey's point, which is that the bulk of these are not rising to this point. They're being resolved either internally at the registrar, where they say, "Yep, you know, we've got two people here. One is clearly the registrant, one is clearly not. So we're going to enforce that internally, or we're working it out with another registrar, or." You know, we then move down to the TDRP. So, was that maybe I didn't send it in time to get the cutoff here? But I think that there was another type of you know, the part of the iceberg that's below the waterline that was those types of resolutions where we had some basic statistics on that.
This is Lars. I'm not sure I recall, James. You send it onto the mailing list?
Yes. It would have been quite a while back now, probably a couple weeks. I'll see if I can dig it up and resend it. Sorry, didn't mean to put it on the spot.
I'm sorry. I'll have a look. I'll have a look straight away as well.
Okay. Mikey, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. If that went to the list, it went by me without a trace as well.
Well, you know, we've changed email systems here, so it's possible that I can, that I whiffed on that one, or it went into the bit bucket, right? So,
I think that it would be fantastic to have another document in addition to this one. This one was really focused at a different audience, but I think that another document that has more than just you and GoDaddy participating in it would be fantastic effort, and so I would throw out a plea to the rest of you registrar types on the call. And to McKaylee, who I'm sure is listening to this transcript, to participate in that in some way. And James, I think if you could demonstrate how that can be done so that, you know, it scrubbed, you know, the data in such a way that no proprietary information was given out, that might be a good template for the other registrars to follow suit. But I think that would be gigantically helpful.
So, Mikey, you would see that, just to clarify, as a separate document or a part of this one?
I would put it in a separate pile. I think it comes at the thing in a slightly different way. And I think we can use that information in a different way. I don't feel strongly. I mean, it can certainly go in here if you want. But I would be quite comfortable with a separate document as well.
Okay, and I'm looking for that message as well. And I probably just, it's possible that I replied to Graham and didn't hit reply all or something along those lines. So I will take a look for that one. And it looks like we're closing in on the end of our call, so I just want to get through the rest of this very quickly here, and then we'll probably pick this up next week. But we do note that some large registrars weighed in here. Looks like anywhere from 4 to 2 cows, or 5 to 6 drone key systems, TDRPs. 4 for 2 cows, 0 for key systems. And then we go over to VeriSign, which I'm certainly opening to this if Barbara wants to weigh in, but since 2009, there were 154 cases filed with VeriSign. And then there's the breakdown between Common Net. Of those, 109 were RFEs, and 45 were application for reinstatement of sponsorship. Barbara, can I put you on the spot quickly to refresh us on the difference between those?
Sure. Thank you, James. This is Barbara. So basically, an application for reinstatement of sponsorship is if the registrars that are basically party to the dispute are able to come to terms that a domain name should be transferred back to a losing registrar. Sorry. If they are able to come to terms but just need assistance in making that transfer happen, then they can file this, what we call an ARS. And what we can do here at the registry is to go ahead and just transfer the domain name back, in essence just changing the registrar record back to the other registrar without having it incur a typical transfer fee or adding an additional year to the expiration or the term of the domain name registration. So
just for clarity, this is not a dispute. This is the resolution of an informal agreement between two registrars.
Right. The registrars were able to talk about it, and they came to agreement, if you will, that the domain name should be back with the other registrar, but they just need assistance in making that happen. So they do all of the legwork up front. What can happen is that the registrar who lost the name would basically send a request for an application, a reinstatement to VeriSign. The other registrar would have 7 days to basically say, yeah, we agree, we're both on the same page with this. And then once we have that agreement from both of the parties, then we'll go ahead and effect the modification to the registrar of record to reflect the other registrar, the losing registrar.
Okay, thank you. And the RFE is something different, though. That's where one registrar is saying, I believe that the other this transfer did not go through, and I'm not seeing agreement from the other registrar.
The request for enforcement is basically what is contemplated by the TDRP. So it's basically if there's a dispute between the registrars, they aren't able to resolve it amongst themselves, and so they're looking to either the registry operators as the first-level transfer dispute resolution provider or a second-level transfer dispute resolution provider, such as, NAF, to resolve the issue, to actually, hear the merits of each side and then determine whether or not the case was or the transfer was actually fraudulent.
Okay. So is it fair to say that those 45 ARS incidents are not EDRP? They did not rise to that level?
They did not because, we weren't asked to make a decision in those. All of the legwork was basically done at the registrar level.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
To transfer the name. Yep.
Okay. So diving down then in the next paragraph, looking at those 109 cases, 59 of those VeriSign rendered a decision, and no decision on the remaining 50. Now, at that point, the 50 that included no decision, would those escalate to those have the option to being appealed to the second-level provider? Is that correct?
So this is Barbara. They would have been able to be appealed to the second-level provider. In the information that I reviewed, I did not see where any of those actually were, but it could be that, I literally asked for an extract of data, and so trying to crunch through that fairly quickly, I may have missed something, but I did not see where any of those actually were appealed to the second level.
Okay. Thank you. So then there's a breakdown there. I know we're up against our time limit now, but there is a breakdown of those 59 cases and how they break down. And again, we're going back now to October 2009, so 3.5 years ago, roughly. Given the size of the industry and the volume of transactions, it's a surprisingly small number. Okay, and then the next phase, the next section of the document discusses the data provided on 10 TDRP cases from NAF and from the Asian Dispute Resolution Center. And what I think is interesting is that the NAF indicates, I think this backs up what Barbara was saying, is that these were all first-level, or these are appeals of first-level decisions, so they could be, I guess, considered part of those 50 that VeriSign did not render a decision on. And it looks like, I don't know that we have that data for whether it was first or second level, let me see here, on the Asian Dispute Resolution Center. So I think that we're starting to, get to how many angels are dancing on the head of a pin, but I think we can see from the large number of complaints that are filed with ICANN, we can whittle that down to valid complaints, and then of those, some are hijacked, some are disputes, and then we can look at registrar data, then registry data, and then finally into the second-level provider data. But I think this is a good report. Maybe we need to just, certainly the ball's in my court to get to find my data and get that re-entered in here, so that's included. But I think we're telling a good picture here, which is that there are a number of filters on this ocean of complaints that boils down to those that are actually legitimate hijackings or unauthorized transfers, and then those that are able to be resolved at the registrar level, and those that kind of move up the food chain until they get to the registry and the second level providers. So let's put a stopping point there, and I'm sorry for taking us over 3 minutes, and I appreciate everyone's patience to get through this document. We'll take a quick look at the mind map next week. We'll continue with our review of the last few comments received, and then we'll go from there. So thanks for your indulgence. And Mikey, did you have any closing or parting comments here, or should we just adjourn for today? Or
Adjourning's fine. I was just stuck in the chat that we can skip that agenda item about going to the council for a while until we can come up really with a good list of things that we might want to take a look at from earlier ones. So I think we're all set there. Thanks, James. Great job today.
Okay, thanks, everybody. Lots done today, and see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.